It's time for Breaking Bread with Papa.
Hey!
Don't you know?
Hey!
It's our goal.
Hey!
It's time for Breaking Bread with Papa.
Hey!
Don't you know?
Hey!
It's also a show.
Hey!
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Breaking Bread with Tom Papa. I am Tom Papa. I am at the table where I just had a great conversation with Leanne Morgan. So funny. You are going to love her. She is one of those people that just came pure stand-up, has gained this huge following of all of these great fans just from pure grinding it out and never giving up, and is such a true, authentic comedian. You are going to love her. So happy she happened to be in LA, and we got to have her come and join us at the table, and I gave her what possibly is one of the best breads I've ever made. I would like to thank the good people at Trade Coffee Partners. Oh, Trade Coffee. Trade Coffee partners with the country's best craft roasters to give the freshest and best tasting coffee. You take this little survey, you tell them what you like, and then they send you Trade Coffee sends you different roasters' coffee from around the country right to your doorstep. It's so perfect. You come home, I came home off the road, and there was a bag of coffee from another little vintage small town roaster, and it shows up in my place. And oh, you're going to love these guys. Trade customers are truly impactful for these independent roasters supporting the local economy in small towns and big cities. Trade is offering new subscribers a total of $30 off your first order, plus free shipping. That's more than 40 cups of coffee for free. This is making me want coffee right now. I just hear coffee and I get excited. Go to drinktrade.com. That's drinktrade.com/papa and take their quiz and find the coffee that you love. And I have to say, they send some coffee, and it really kind of matches to what you want. And if you don't want it, they will adjust and send you and make sure. I do the pour over. More about that later. Trade Coffee. Thank you. Also like to thank the good people at Policy Genius. PolicyGenius.com. Life insurance gives you peace of mind, and you can trust Policy Genius. They don't add on extra fees or sell your info to third parties. Head to PolicyGenius.com to get your free life insurance quote. They basically do all of the research for you in the life insurance realm, and then you go to this one place and they give you an analysis of all the different policies that you can have. See how much you could save at PolicyGenius.com. So happy this worked out. I have been an admirer of Leanne's for quite some time. She is so funny. She just has this great, like I said before, like this very honest, truthful place from where her comedy comes from. She talks a lot about family. She's got a great, great voice. And we've been, you know, kind of going back and forth on social media. And it just so happened that my free day where I can hustle over here to the studio, she happens to be in going and doing a thing on Kelly Clarkson and doing some stand-up around town. And it just worked out perfectly. Also, worked out perfectly with my bread schedule, where I had baked a bread for her, and then I saw a window, a little opening, and I was like, wouldn't this be better if I can actually bring a bread to her that is actually right out of the oven? Because, of course, then you get the smell, and you get the... And I use this bread flour from Central Milling, where I get all my flour from, and I am so excited because there's another loaf at home waiting for me. I think what I gave her might be one of the best breads I've made. And I have to say, I know it's corny, but when you know that you want it to come out right and you're making it for someone who you have on your mind, this individual, and you want to make sure that that they're going to love it, every little aspect of how you're doing it, everything that you know, you have this when you make meals and you know that you want it to be right and you just have them on your mind, it's more magical than when you're just baking bread for nobody, just doing it just to do it. I mean, you of course, you can accomplish things that way. But when you have someone in mind, as I did with Leanne, it all just worked out, I think. It looks beautiful. We'll see when she gets to her hotel room. She says she loves bread, and she doesn't seem like the kind of person that is going to be dishonest or even need a knife to get into this bread. I think she's going to be very... I think she's going to be happy in the hotel room. All right, so we had this great conversation. You're going to love it. It's a big, healthy portion of Leanne Morgan. So let's get right to it. Cheers. Thank you for being here. I can't believe this worked out.
Oh, no. And I'm so tickled. Thank you for having me.
What a dream. This is so perfect. You're touring all over the place. You're doing gigantic things. How great that you just happened to roll through on literally the one day that I even had to come to meet at the studio.
I know.
If you were Jewish, I would call it kismet.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah. What do you call... a lucky happenstance in the South?
It was meant to be. It's just meant to be.
Well, I baked you bread. I was going to...
Thank you. I'm a bread person.
You are?
Oh, I am.
Oh, that's good.
And I'm a sourdough person.
Oh, my God. Well, this is really special because I made one the day before, and it gets better each day. Like, after it bakes, it's got, like, 2 days of it still, like... the flavor's kind of deepening. But then today, with this bread flour, I made this one. And it was so perfect that I was like, I decided to jump the other one that I was going to give you. And just feel it because it's warm, because I just came out of the oven.
Tom, what a beauty.
See how much I love you? Right?
Gosh, Tom, thank you, honey. This may be one of the best things that's ever happened to me.
Now, I was worried because I know you're on the road, but what do you do in your hotel room at your own time it's none of my business.
I will get real down and dirty with this sourdough.
Maybe you don't need enough.
I could pinch it like when you take communion. You know, my son is 28 years old, and mm-hmm. he baked a lot of bread during the COVID.
He did.
Uh-huh. And he loves to cook and bake.
Oh,
and then
nice.
My baby child is 24, and she loves to bake.
Oh.
They will be on fire.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, they've got yeast packets and all that.
That's good.
I've never baked bread.
Really?
And I'm from my people... are farming people, and we, you know, kill our own meat.
Right.
And make sausage and hogs. And, yeah, we have a thing called hog killing. We don't... I didn't ever kill a hog.
Uh-huh.
But we make the sausage out of it. My mom and dad had a meat processing plant, and that's how they put my sister and I through college. But
wow. Where was this?
In Adams, Tennessee, outside of Nashville.
Right.
On the Kentucky-Tennessee border.
Okay.
Like 35 minutes from Nashville.
Right.
So, it very rural... But yet we had Nashville, so
right.
I would go to buy underwear, and there would be the Mandrell sisters, you know. So I saw country music people,
right?
Like you go to Sherwin Williams and see Johnny Cash and June in a mink coat,
no,
with cans of paint,
no,
yeah, because they were stars, but they were normal people that did their own painting, I guess.
That's amazing.
But anyway, my people, my mama's always cooked. I've always cooked. I've raised three children. But I've never baked. Like, my mom can make biscuits. My little mother-in-law, ooh, Gail, her biscuits will make you fight.
Yeah.
And then, but I've never, I think it takes a scientist. Are you, like, smart in science?
I am not. See, I thought the same thing, but bread is kind of a middle ground between cooking and baking the pastry scientific way. There's forgiveness in bread. You can be a little sloppier. You can be a little inaccurate. There's definitely more than in cooking where you just throw in handfuls of whatever.
Yeah.
But I am not. So let that serve as inspiration. Because if I could do it, most people can.
And you don't use a bread machine.
Oh,
you're not one of those people.
I might end this interview right now.
Because that is, that's like a...
That's, yeah.
That's people that don't know what they're doing.
That's, yeah.
So you actually do this, let things rise.
Let things rise.
You've got a starter? Do you have a sourdough starter?
I have two sourdough starters. And so I came off the road and... then started baking bread, and then I knew from the time we booked, today is Wednesday, so on Monday I got the starter going, and then last night mixed all of the flour and the water together and folded it and stuff before I went to bed, and then let it ferment overnight, and that the flavor really starts to get in. So then when I wake up in the morning, what was a little bit in the bucket is now coming over the top of the bucket. And then pour it out and size it up and shape it, put it in the fridge for a couple hours, and then baked it. And here we are.
Oh, that looks like a bakery. You've got that crust on it, that good brown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm trying to go a little darker with it lately. Yeah. Yeah. I think the flavors are deeper. Right?
Oh, hey, Tom. But do these people out in Los Angeles eat bread?
Well, that's, you know what I found? Because I, you know what they don't have out here? I was raised in New Jersey, and all Italian stuff all around us and all that thing. And a cannoli. Have you ever had a cannoli?
Yes.
Okay, now the cannolis in New York and New Jersey and Philadelphia are just... amazing. They're special. Out here, there's no good cannoli. They taste like wonton and shells. No one has, I haven't found one place, and there's good Italian places, not one that has replicated it. And I said to my wife, that would be the key. If we could get the cannoli place. And she's like, people out here aren't going to eat it. The people out here don't eat bread and cannolis. But I think they're closet eaters. I think they do show up and they do eat this stuff. And then the rest, then they hike all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe count macros.
Right.
You know, that's the new buzzword.
Macros.
That you can get in a carb.
Uh-huh.
But you got to watch everything else. And that takes science, too. I don't like that.
No.
There's apps for that. My daughter's dating a guy that he counts his macros. So
really? I don't even know what those are.
I know.
I'm
but
not
it makes
do
your
it.
Body change, and people look, you know, tiny in their pants.
Right.
And I say that on the day that I had to, I had just filmed an hour. Mm-hmm. We were talking about, you know, having a new hour, and everything is what have you done for me lately now?
Yeah.
In comedy, but and I had to watch myself on stage from the side, and I bought a really nice dress that is, I'm beautiful in it in person. And on stage, from the side, it was like, well, first of all, I tied the bow up under my breast, and these breasts, Tom, I'm on this, okay. I had three babies, and I nursed them. So I'm 56 years old. So when I quit nursing my last baby, and she's 24, she was 18 months old. And so after you nurse three babies, I mean, it ruined my breasts.
Right.
And I was still young and had life left in me. And and so back then, everybody was getting the Pamela Anderson implants.
Yeah.
And I don't talk about this a lot because I don't talk about it on stage. Even though now I'm an old woman. Now, when I was starting comedy in my late 30s, if I talked about my breast implants, I just felt like it was a distraction.
Right.
So now, I mean, I'm old, and I'm not old, but I'm not out catting around, so
right.
Nobody's going to be threatened by me. But these old implants have now expired. I got these big Pamela Anderson horrible.
So now, they can go bad? They can start to...
Well, I mean, I think they can leak and do crazy mess. Mine are still in good shape and all that. And my husband's very tight with money and has said, nothing's wrong with those. You don't need to do a thing. They're fine. But I'm like, there's a serial number on them. And there's an expiration date.
Right.
And I just think, at this point in my life, I've had a good run, you know.
Right.
I've enjoyed them. We've all had a good time. It's time to get them out. And I see that my picture... my video and my fanny, my butt, I feel like it looks like, you know, those old women that work in the hospital and walk around, you can hear their thighs rubbing together in polyester. It's like you could put a cafeteria tray on my fanny. And then there's these huge watermelon breasts. And I just think, who is that? saying. That's not me. And so then I'll go on a thing where I'm like, I'm not going to eat any bread.
Yeah, no.
And
more.
I'm not going to, and I'm just going to eat spinach and chicken. And but you know, I can't, Tom.
I can't either.
I just can't.
I can't. Every day I wake up and I think I feel fat, and I think, I have a 16-year-old who's going through her vegan phase, and I'm like, maybe I should just do what she's doing and just go vegan. And then I go upstairs, and as I'm thinking about it, I'm literally putting butter on a piece of toast and eating it. I'm like, well, I blew it again today. This butter's not vegan. And then I just can't do it. I can't. There's a limit to how much benefit we're going to get if we did everything right. If we did the macros, did the vegan, worked out, did all this stuff, how good is it going to be?
You got one life to live.
Yeah.
You got, and you're funny. And so I know all of your life you've been a joy. And so you probably find, you know, happiness in a lot of simple things.
Right.
I do too.
Yeah.
I like when my kids come home, it's just like a big party. And
right.
I want us to eat, but I'm from the country. I feed. I want to feed, and I'm sure that's something like Italian people.
Yes, it is very similar. It is. Now, are you the host when you come? You're the one at the helm.
I love to have my kids come home and people over.
Right.
And I like to cook and for everybody to have a good time and be together.
Yeah.
I love all that.
What's your main thing that you cook if you've got all the kids are home?
They do love my chicken piccata.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell you where I got that recipe, because I didn't grow up fixing chicken piccata.
Right.
That was from Trisha Yearwood's first cookbook after she started dating Garth Brooks.
Oh.
Which I don't know what all that was about. I don't know. I'm not going to judge, but, you know, something went on there.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she's got an unbelievable cookbook. And I think they've been very happy together. I shouldn't have said that, but I don't know. You know, he was married to Sandy.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, what do I know? I don't know them. Okay, so she had a cookbook that came out, and it's one of the best cookbooks.
Really?
And it is simple. Like, I can't do a bunch of crazy mess that I've never heard of.
Yeah.
I like simple recipes, but I started making chicken piccata, and they love it. And then I'm a big, because my people grew their own food, and you know, we had beef and killed our own cows. I mean, again, I did not kill a cow, but
what's the
little man that had four fingers killed them.
Did you have to kill anything?
No,
never,
no.
Not even a chicken.
No. My little grandmama would wring a chicken's neck in front of me, and then pluck it, and we'd eat it. And so I went through, when my little daddy opened up that meat processing plant, I went vegetarian from sixth grade. I didn't know what it was called. From sixth grade until I went to the University of Tennessee. And then I just couldn't eat meat.
Couldn't
it freaked
do it.
Me out.
Right.
Yeah, I saw all that. And I had to work in it, and I didn't like it. And then I went to UT, and I kind of got away from it.
Uh-huh.
And I started eating it again. And let me say that the Italian boys, I'd never met an Italian boy. And so when I went to UT, I made out with a lot of people from New Jersey.
Oh, really?
I did. I was very attracted to them. I really was. I can think of a couple of names. There's something about Italian boys.
They got a little something going on.
They got a little something going on.
Yeah.
They really do.
Yeah. And but Italian boys look at Southern ladies the same way.
Do they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we win Miss USA.
Yep.
You know. There's a lot of pretty women in the South, and we duty
sure
up, you
are.
Know, Tom, because I think about, all right, my husband went to school with a lot of smart people, went to a public high school and took AP courses, and my husband's very smart and anal retentive, and everything has to be perfect. And he, one of his best friends married a girl that had graduated from Princeton.
Oh.
And she was from where the Pilgrims landed. Okay, that was Plymouth.
Plymouth, yeah.
She was from up around there.
Uh-huh.
And we went to their wedding, and all the groomsmen had on seersucker suits,
uh-huh.
the Southern boys.
Mm-hmm.
And all those women from around there, no makeup on, no spray tans. We all came
sensible
up from
shoes.
a nice wedge. We all came in there like a bunch of, I don't know what you'd even, big hats, lipstick, eyelashes on. And I realized, I go, we are very different from these girls up north. And then I remember the girls from Princeton talking about their thesis. And I had had my second baby, was pregnant with my third one. I didn't know it. And I was retaining fluid and took a big bag of feminine protection because I thought, oh, I'm not going to have sex. Because it's about to start. And then found out I was pregnant with my third baby up there. And
that's
just
when you
fall
found
asleep
out
in the car. And thought, I wonder why this is. Anyway, they were all talking about theses, and I was thinking, Barney. You know, I was listening to, I was watching Barney and and Pop Tarts in a couch smush. Yeah. So you've got, mine are grown. I've got a grandbaby, Tom.
Yeah, I know. I wanted to ask you about that because your stuff is so funny. And there's been people on YouTube. You got huge numbers off of Facebook and YouTube and just people, which is such a testament to how funny you are, because a lot of times a platform will get a lot of eyes on something that maybe isn't that great, but stuff that's great, the eyeballs will find it, and that's what's happened to you, and it's great to see.
Thank you.
And it really resonates because you are a little ahead of me, and when you talk about how mean your daughter was and all that kind of stuff, and that's what I'm currently going through. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what's up ahead.
Because your babies are how old?
I've got 16 and 19, about to be 17 and 20.
Girls,
like
both
month.
Girls?
Both girls. And your run on the mean teenager coming down the stairs and being so scared and how they're nice to everyone in the world and they get into your minivan, all that stuff is so accurate and so deadly, deadly true. And here's something, this is what I want to share with you. So I'm on tour now and I'm telling these jokes about what I'm going through with my daughters through the pandemic. And I literally talk about how my one daughter, and this all happened, how one daughter came in and said she could hear me breathing from the other room when she's trying to watch a movie.
Yeah.
And the other one said that she doesn't like the way I chew my granola. It's exactly your life. It's exactly your bit. You have the same thing.
That's true.
I know it's true. I know it's true because every single other thing that you talk about with your daughter, I'm like, this is when people come up to us after, and we're very similar, talking about family and stuff, and they come up, I'm like, you must be in my living room. Are you married to my husband?
Right.
And I'm geeking out now in the same way because I'm like, I'm living your life.
And I bet people relate to, what you're saying. And I think people want to relate to something. And when I first got started in comedy, I mean, this is 22 years that I've been doing it. And I know that people think, oh, this just happened for her. And she's like one of these YouTubers that just put out this stuff. But I mean, this is a long time coming.
Yeah.
And I remember people telling me years ago, there's going to be, people are going to buy tickets to shows that they've seen something on Facebook. And I'm like, what? That sounds like voodoo. And I fought that stuff for a long time, social media. And I was like, I don't need that. And, things were just, I was, in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Barely doing, doing whatever I could get, horrible gigs.
Yeah.
And then going out on the road some in comedy clubs, but comedy clubs didn't book me as much. Because you got to come up through those,
Yeah.
And I wasn't in L.A. or New York, and my husband's, got a job and had health insurance, so we stayed in Knoxville. I begged him to come to L.A. When they were little, I said, Chuck, please, let's move, and I'll cook on a hot plate, and I know I can make it. And he was like, what, are you crazy? I mean, he's a very practical person.
Right.
Anyway, and I'm a dreamer. But
you knew it. You had a feeling.
I knew it. Yeah. I just knew it. But anyway, here it's better, it's happened now. Mm. My children don't need me. They're grown.
Right.
And because I, was the one that took care of them because their daddy was always traveling with his job. But yes, I started talking about birthing and being pregnant. That was a very, very prolific time for me.
Yeah.
Then it went through elementary school, and you know, somebody doing on a t-ball field,
right?
And then that was a good time. And then middle school, they were like, do not speak my name, do not, it's like Will Smith, you know, get your name out now. And then that was a very dry time. And then high school, they were like, we don't care what you do. And they didn't, they were like, we're never going to see you again. What difference does it make? And now people say to me all the time, do they care what you're talking about? And they go, I go, no. And they're like, Mom, do whatever you want to. But that middle child, when that bit came out and I talked about how hateful she was,
right,
people were like, you shouldn't be making a fun of a child that has misphonia, which is like a, like you can't take sound. And I'm like, she doesn't have misphonia. She's just a real butthole.
Yeah, she's just mean.
Just mean. But let me give you this hope.
Okay. Because
if you've got one going through that,
yeah,
they will grow out of that. Now, it takes a long time.
Yeah.
But they will come back around, and they'll end up your very best friend.
Yeah.
And you tell your wife that.
Okay,
y'all,
she needs to hear it more than I do, because she gets more of it.
She's, yeah, a mama does.
Yeah, yeah. There's a different dynamic there.
Yeah.
And I see the skies clear at some points. Like, I see it like, oh, there she is. And then you think it's cool. And then see them at breakfast.
Yeah, like that.
Like, oh, no. Right?
And, you know, mine still can do that. My girls can still do me that way. But it's when they're hormonal. And they don't mean to. And I just don't answer the phone when I know that they're going to be a butthole. But they are the ones that check on me. I've heard from both of them 3 times today.
Right.
And they, girls tend to you, Tom.
Yeah.
So my boy is precious, and I'm in love with him, but he's got his own wife and baby. And so he calls me, but not like my girls. Girls tend to their mom and dad. And
that's what his girl's doing with her people.
Yeah, her people. He doesn't cling to her people, but I have to share with her people.
Right.
But they're darling. But see, now I've got this grandbaby, and they're overwhelmed, and they both work full time. And my daughter-in-law is in MBA school at night and on the weekends.
Oh boy!
And so they need us.
They're
so
near
I
you?
Get my they're 20 minutes, so I get that baby all the time.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, and just wait till you have. And I know you're a long way away from that, Tom. But it is so wonderful.
Really?
And people would say that to me. They go, it's the best thing that ever happened to you. And I would, and I received that. I felt like I received it. But you don't know until it gets here.
Why?
Like,
why
is... I got in an Uber about a month ago with a man. And where was I? It's one of my shows on my tour. And he said, we were talking about having grandbabies. And he said, this sounds terrible. But if my grandson came to me and asked me to hide a body, I think I'd help him. And I go, I get it. There's something about a grandbaby. I just want him to have, like, I'm always looking for water toys now, a wheelbarrow. He's going to be 17 months old, and he likes to mow. He likes to be out in the yard. And so I'm just thinking, books about mowing, books about grass, books about frogs. And he is just so yummy. And I don't want him to suffer. Like, I think I made a lot of mistakes probably raising children. I think I did some good things,
because
I've got 3 precious children.
Yes.
And they're very compassionate people, and they're successful in life and all that. But I don't think I helicoptered them.
Right.
I knew that wasn't the right thing to do.
Yeah.
So I never, like, if something went wrong at school or whatever, I didn't jump in and try to fix it.
Right. Right.
This baby, though. If I just can't, if he goes, I'm like, what does he want? I cannot take it. And I think that's being a grandmama and a granddaddy. My husband can't either. My husband's crazy about this.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I was thinking this way, because I don't know it, but I can play act it, that when my daughter was, you know, she's going through that teen thing, and I was like, and she's got, you know, she's doing her stuff and all, and I was like, maybe she just needs more love. Maybe she just needs more attention. Get off her back. Just be there to be. And I was like, what if I raised my daughter like a granddaughter? What if I just treat her the way that a grandparent would? And I kind of moved that way a little bit. But you have to ultimately discipline at some point.
Oh, yeah.
They can't just live with their grandparents.
I know, because like then if you everybody were just, would be,
right, yeah.
Woo, television in the room. And
yeah, exactly. But there is something to be said, like that little guy, whatever his name is.
Charles Wilbur.
Charles, what a great name.
Thank you. Charles Wilbur. Boy. Ryan Hamilton said to me, strong name, Lynn. I was like, thank you, Ryan.
Yeah.
It's from two great granddaddies. Charles Wilbur. And we call him Charles Wilbur.
That is such a
sometimes
great.
Sometimes CW.
Yeah.
But my boy's an old soul, the one that bakes.
Uh-huh.
Charlie.
Right.
He's like an 80-year-old man, has a garden and loves all that kind of stuff, fly fishes.
Yeah. Was he always that way?
Yeah.
He was.
He came out of my womb an old soul, an 80-year-old man. And from the time he was three, just the things he was interested in.
Yeah.
And loves to read and loves to learn. But yeah, like my people grew dark fire tobacco. That, where I'm from in Tennessee, uh-huh. they're known for that.
Right.
That makes Dieppe, Skoal, and Copenhagen.
What's it called? Dark what?
Dark-fired tobacco.
Dark-fired.
It's a certain kind of tobacco.
Right.
So I smoked in the 80s, Tom, and I'm so ashamed. Yeah, I did.
Did you look cool?
I did. Yeah. And I probably could have dated a lot of cuter men, you know, if I didn't smell bad. Right. But I waited tables, and I say
that's
in my
so funny.
In my hour. I mean, I made terrible decisions in the 80s. I was wrecked.
You were?
I was.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll talk about that some other time.
Were you
but
married in the 80s?
I got married, and this is the first time I've ever talked about this. Okay,
right.
Tom.
No,
Papa,
no, you're
see,
not yet.
Because
right.
you are, there's something about you. I feel like we've been friends for 100 years.
I do, too.
You angel.
Yeah.
Okay, I got married at 21 to a very charismatic, beautiful guy that was older than me. And I was lost, and I was an idiot. And I was just not in a good place. Uh-huh. And I was at the University of Tennessee, and he talked me into dropping out.
Oh.
And I didn't have any kind of direction. Because
yeah.
the time when I was five, I wanted to be in show business.
Uh-huh.
But being in the country and coming up through all that, I was like, how's that going to happen? You know, that's crazy. But
yeah.
it was always in my mind, like, I love comedy and I wanted to do. But I just didn't know, I would have never gone out to LA at 18.
Right.
I could have never.
Right.
So so I was just lost and didn't know what I was going to do and didn't have a focus on a major or anything and hadn't done well in school.
Right.
And it was just right for somebody to come in. And he was, I say looking back, mentally ill. And at the time,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
back then, we didn't know what, you just think, oh, they're mean as a snake. But anyway, got a divorce. I was divorced at 23.
Whoa. Wait,
which
was
made
he
me think of something like Happy Days. Like, you know, when a divorcee would come on Happy Days.
Yeah.
That's what I felt like.
At 23.
At
was
23.
Was he the bad guy? Were the bad boy kind of type? Was
He was, no.
What?
I wouldn't say that.
What?
He was a frat guy in college, but
uh-huh.
he was older. He was already out.
And uh-huh.
But he was beautiful, and he was, he just swept me off my feet.
Right,
and
right.
And then it was abusive, and it was all these things that were terrible. And then, so I got out of it.
In 2 years.
In about 2.5 years. And then he went on to, I don't know if I should tell this, but brilliant. But he went on to launch Amazon.com. I know. Now, when I was with him.
What?
He was very up and down, very emotional and up and down. I wonder if that now would be called bipolar.
Right.
But then he went back to school after we divorced and said, I saw him out somewhere and he said, I'm getting a master's in what they call this thing called the internet or the interweb or something. I remember thinking, voodoo. Anyway, he's no longer with us. He has passed away, but he was known as the godfather of SEO link building. So if you're, you know, when they're marketing, internet
right.
marketing, and they do names like under your YouTube channel,
uh-huh.
like Tom Pop and Sourdough and
right.
comedy and all these SEO that links you to, so the other people see your videos
right,
or whatever.
Right.
He was known, he like started that.
Whoa.
And had a beautiful family, beautiful wife, and three little children.
Jeez.
And,
so he, like, got normal after.
I don't think so.
Not normal.
But
he made his.
Yeah, he made a lot of money.
Uh huh.
And but he took his own life, and so.
Jeez.
Yeah. So he. So I here I am, you know, this girl from Adams, Tennessee, Mary, then feel like this huge failure.
Right.
Because I had to get out of it. I had to.
It's good you did.
And then went back to school, met my husband now, Chuck.
Right.
Had a bunch of kids by Chuck. All right, let me tell you that Chuck moved to the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains.
Whoa.
And was, because he is from Morristown, Tennessee, which is up in East Tennessee, but very affluent area with a country club. Like, my people, I didn't know that people played tennis and golf. I thought that was like something the queen did.
Yeah.
We didn't have that around where I was from. So he had all that.
Jeez.
And was raised playing golf and doing all that, and was very smart in school. And he was getting an MBA. We met. And then... the whole time I'm thinking, I can't get in with you because I'm going to Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
Then we married, and he bought a used mobile home business in Bean Station, Tennessee, that is in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains. He never set foot in a trailer. He had been to play golf with a little crusty man named, what was that little man's name? Fran. And Fran and his little and Chuck's dad, and they were playing golf. And Fran said, "I've had this business, and it's been very lucrative. And but I'm gonna retire and get out." And so Chuck bought it, and it never stepped in a mobile home. So we had this business, and we were young, like 26 and 27.
Right.
And I'm a little bit older than him. And which I say that, Tom, and I bet people that listen to your podcast go, in the South. So she's already been married twice, and she's only. Seven. We marry young.
It's on brand. It's on brand.
We do. All my life it was like find you a man, put on a push up bra, and let's go. You know.
So when you have that in your head, but you also have I'm going to be a star in my head, and you haven't done anything at this point to become a star, but you're still it's very much in your head that I'm going to be a big comedian one day.
Yes.
So you're going through your life and you have people in your life that are dependent on you, working hard, bringing in money, creating a life for them. There is always that little thing in the back of your head to where you want to make sure if something, God forbid, were to happen, they would be taken care of. Life insurance does that. It calms you down. It's nice to know that you've done the responsible thing and did the research and took care of these people. So you don't have to worry, that you just feel like, okay, like I said, God forbid, but life insurance is a grown-up thing that you should do, but it's a big minefield and you don't know how to do it and who to trust. There are some of these big ticket items where you just need some help. The people at Policy Genius are your friends. They will click on the link in the description or head to policygenius.com. You answer a few questions, and in minutes, you can compare personalized quotes from top companies to find your lowest price. That's a nice service. It's a nice service when you know that you have somebody that has your back. You can save 50% or more on life insurance by comparing quotes with Policy Genius. The team of licensed experts at Policy Genius are on hand through the entire process to help you understand your options and make the decisions with confidence. The team works for you, not the insurance companies. So whether you're just starting to shop or have questions about your active policy, they're your independent advocates offering unbiased advice. Head to policygenius.com, get your free life insurance quotes, and see how much you can save. They don't add extra fees. They don't sell your info to third parties. They have thousands of five-star reviews across Google and Trustpilot. Head to policygenius.com, get your free life insurance quotes, and see how much you could save and how good you'll feel about yourself when you take care of this task for the people that you care about. Also like to thank the good people at Trade Coffee. Okay, so I took this little quiz. You know I love coffee. I love it. It is right now as I'm recording this. a little too late to be drinking coffee because I probably will be up late at night. But I do have a show at the Comedy Store tonight. This is my rationalization. I love coffee. I do the pour over method, which means I get whole coffee beans and I grind them down and I put them in my little pour over cup, pour the hot water over it, and get a single cup of great coffee. And I'm always sniffing around. I'm always searching for the best bags. And I know the ones in the supermarket that are too greasy. I know the ones that are too oily. I know the ones that just bloom when the water hits it. And it just gives you this beautiful aromatic smell. And you know that that's going to be a great cup of coffee. And I have to say, the more educated I am on coffee, the less of it I drink, where I would drink like six cups just trying to pound it of this bad coffee. And now it's like each one is just golden. And I will just have like two in the morning and spend the time with it. And it makes the day so much better. I can't say enough about finding the right coffee. And this is where Trade Coffee comes in. They connect customers to the freshest and best tasting coffee they've ever made at home by partnering with the country's best handcraft roasters. Not handcraft, just craft roasters. They're independent businesses from big cities and small towns. I got some from San Diego. I got some from up in Portland. And this is a great way to give these small roasters, like I had this small roaster in Chicago that I liked. They don't have a national presence. But people like Trade Coffee actually test all the thousands of coffees, keep 450 different kinds live and ready to ship every day. There's no one perfect coffee, but there is perfect coffee for you. Trade's first match guarantee. Trade is so confident that they'll match you right for the first time. This is what I was talking about before, that if they don't, they'll take your feedback and an actual coffee expert will work with you to send a brand new bag to you for free. It's a great service. Like I said, I got off the road and there was that little bag there waiting for me. And I know this is going to be coffee that I don't even know about from some part of the country I haven't even visited. But Trade Coffee did the work for me based on the stuff, the analysis that I gave them in the quiz. So right now, Trade is offering new subscribers a total of $30 off your first order plus free shipping when you go to drinktrade.com/Papa. Let them know that we sent you. That's more than 40 cups of coffee for free. Get started by taking their quiz at drinktrade.com/papa and let Trade find you a coffee you'll love. That's drinktrade.com/papa, P-A-P-A, for $30 off. Oh, I know I'm going to drink more coffee when I get home.
So Chuck and I went on vacation out here to see my sister. She was working for a company in Huntington Beach.
Uh-huh.
So we came out here to see her. I went to the Comedy Store.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul Mooney closed the show that night.
Right.
Dom Herrera was on.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of Dom Herrera.
Oh, yeah. We all are.
And I think I look at that lineup, and I remember being so nervous.
Yeah.
And sitting watching them. And the whole time, I'm sure Chuck just sat and enjoyed it and watched them. The whole time I sat and thought, okay, I need to be doing this. This is, okay, I can do it. I know,
right.
I can do it. Like that, I felt that way the whole time. And, I just didn't know. I just didn't know how or. And I thought, well, am I crazy? Am I like the people on American Idol that think they can sing?
Right.
Like, I thought, am I crazy? I don't need to, you know. So I was just fighting in my own head this whole time. And then, I finished my degree at the University of Tennessee. But I had my first baby, and I wanted to stay home with him and nurse.
Right.
And I always wanted to be a stay-home mom.
Yeah.
And I started selling jewelry.
Uh-huh.
Like Tupperware.
Uh-huh.
My friend in Nashville said there's this jewelry company and you can make extra money and you can meet people.
Mm-hmm.
So I started selling jewelry. I don't even care about jewelry.
Right.
And we all look like Mr. T. Like they'd say, go to the grocery store and wear all this jewelry. It was one of those multi-level marketing things.
And you're walking around town with all this jewelry.
I'm walking around a tiny town. Yeah, with a lot of chains on and big earrings. And but they were darling people. And And I started selling jewelry to everybody in East Tennessee. And what it was is I kind of developed a shtick. And I would talk about breastfeeding and hemorrhoids and how I wanted to kill Chuck because he didn't hear the baby crying the night. Uh-huh. And women thought I was funny. And so they started booking me like a year in advance. And I remember saying, it's either now, book a party with me now, or see me in Las Vegas later. And I remember thinking, that was stupid. I don't know why I said that. Anyway.
It was booking parties? Like
I was booking parties, and they would book me. And they were booking me way far out because women would say, she's fun. You can have a party, put some dip out, buy a $20 pair of earrings, and she's pretty funny.
Wait.
So then one night, somebody, I was doing my thing, and somebody peed on a couch, Tom. And I saw her recently. 20-something years later,
yeah.
And she works at my eye doctor, and she went, oh, my gosh, Lynn. I went, Carmen. And she and I said, when you peed on that couch, Carmen, it was like a God thing. Like, I knew it was like one of those moments where I thought, okay, I've got it. I could do this. Well, the company noticed and started asking me to speak at their big things.
Whoa.
And I was supposed to be talking about, I was supposed to have a speech prepared and talk about how I could get booked, but
yeah.
I didn't. I talked about breastfeeding and hemorrhoids. And women would say, that was the first time I was in front of a big audience where they would say, you need to be a stand-up. I mean, why aren't you doing stand-up? And that, so then, you know, I just did stuff around Morristown, Tennessee, and just anything I could get. And
That's amazing. Weird
stuff. It was stuff like, little 80-year-old woman that went to my Methodist church, she said, Lynn, would you come and do your little thing? Everybody is always says to me, can you do your little thing?
Yeah.
Can you put on a program? And they volunteers at the hospital, and we'll pay you with cafeteria food. And I was like, yes. And so I did that kind of stuff for a long time. And then my...
What's a long time?
Probably 2 years or something like that, two or 3 years. And then... I talked Brian Dorfman at Zany's in Nashville and let me open.
Uh-huh.
And I opened for Billy Gardell.
Ah.
And I'm sure I sucked. And I went back in his office and Brian said, I think you got something. He said, but how are you going to do this with three babies? He said, you know, Roseanne did it and raised them in a station wagon in a parking lot and it's not good.
Yeah.
So... I just thought, okay, I'll have to figure, because I wanted to do clubs, but I thought I'll just have to figure out another way. Anyway, Chuck sold that business and went to work for a large company that sent us to San Antonio, Texas. So I had the River Club. Did you ever work the River Club?
No.
You know, a club in a mall.
Right.
It's not always the best fun thing. But it was a lot of young people would come in. They let me get up at night, late night, and everybody was high on marijuana. And I was talking about doo-doo balls on a t-ball field. But I was different than everybody. You know, there's not a lot of young moms doing comedy, you know, really.
Didn't you find that was actually... good, like, because I talk a lot about family, and I was going through the same stuff, and you know, you're talking about your life, it's all autobiographical, so you're going through this stuff that they're not going through, a younger audience isn't, but I always felt like if this stuff still works in front of the Laugh Factory audience on Friday at midnight, and they're identifying from whatever angle they're experiencing something about a family, they're seeing their parents or their brothers or sisters,
siblings, or yeah,
that it, if it worked there, then it was good to go.
Yes,
right. Like it was a good test.
It really is when everybody's high and drunk on marijuana.
Yeah,
in the middle in midnight.
Right, exactly. Because there's some people, comedians, that touch on this stuff in a way that doesn't appeal to everybody. That it is it's only for an older crowd.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you got young comics talking about, you know, getting high and watching porn and all that. And they've got their thing.
Yeah.
But I know that one of my television deals, I've had a bunch, you know, for sitcoms and stuff, they haven't made it. And but they sent my reel back then, and they, I think, to Spike TV or something, and they said... it was young people, but they liked you, Lynn, because... They were in the minivan with their sister when she, you know, hit their mom in the back of the head with a backpack, you know, or came out and whatever.
Yeah.
It said, don't you have a piece of cheese in this car? So you're right. I think that it's, when you talk about, everybody's been through all that.
Right, exactly. Exactly. They've been in some angle. If you're just in a family, you know what's going on.
Yeah.
You know how this is, how it's going to play out.
Yeah. And I think people out here at first, producers and stuff were like, oh, she's a Southern comedian. Like, blue collar had boomed. And they were like, oh, well, she's a Southern comic. And then I would do showcases and stuff, and they would say, you know, I mean, all kinds of women go through what you talk about universal things.
Right.
You just happen to have a thick accent.
Right.
But I don't talk about actually being from the South.
Right.
I talk about feeling fat in my pants, going to Weight Watchers. I'm in menopause. I have to prostitute myself to Chuck. For my kids to have nice things, Tom. And it's just things that I think most, women go through.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And I'm so lucky that I remember seeing, you were with Jerry Seinfeld in San Antonio at the Majestic, right?
Yeah.
Years ago. Or was I know I wasn't high on marijuana because I didn't do it. But I remember getting Chuck tickets for his birthday.
Right.
And I remember, loving you. But I knew, I've always loved you. And then Jerry Seinfeld came out, and I thought, he can talk about a cotton ball.
Right.
And I thought, I've always admired that, but I just don't think that way. I've got to talk about something that happened.
Right, right, exactly. I know. That is the thing. There's definitely people you admire, and you see them, and you're like, what? They're doing so well, and it's like, wow, but I could write all of the edgy, whatever the hot topic is, race, transgender, whatever stuff, and go up on stage, and the audience will be like, "What are you doing? What are you doing?"
I know.
You are what you are. Yeah. I actually had this interesting conversation with Jimmy Carr over the weekend, and he had a great way to express it, that your being is your being. And when you're up on stage, they know exactly who you are before you even say anything. And he described it as comedians leak. We leak. All of our essence just pours out of us. So before you even say anything, they're like, oh, I know exactly who she is and what she's about. So
yeah,
you just got to keep true to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And see, I think... Brian Dorfman said this to me. He said, there's so many funny people, but you got to be unique to stand out, to get, to blow up or to whatever. And to me, see, I could be in New York and a million people, and I could pick you out in a second. I mean, you're very unique.
Uh-huh.
And you've always been, and I know they've told you that, but there's something about you. You stand out.
Yeah, it's just... I think it's authenticity. I think that's what it is. Like, you're not faking it. When you're on stage, you're not pretending to be. And you can feel it. That's the thing, is when you watch, it's like you're not just hearing funny jokes. You're actually feeling it and relating it to your life. Oh. So when your daughter was mean, back to my therapy session.
Yes.
When your daughter was mean, the thing that surprises me is, like, you're like, okay, she's just going through that. That's typical, happens to everybody. But it surprises me how she can, you're like expecting it, you're expecting a mood, whatever, and they can just do something that hurts your feelings.
Oh.
And it's just reaction, right, out of you. There's no, I'm trying to be cool with it, and then they do something, you're like, oh.
It hurts so worse than anything. Turn on you on a dime.
Right.
And hurt with words.
Yes.
Horrible things.
I know. I know. So when you were going through that, what was your strategy? How would you, just in the day-to-day?
She says that it was very few times, because I'm pretty laid back. Their daddy's not.
Right.
He's type A, anal retentive. Emotional, even though he's introverted, he reacts.
Yeah.
And I'm more like, I'm laid back, and I can...
Yeah.
I feel like I'm pretty good around kids. I got my degree in child family studies.
Uh-huh.
I feel like I've got a higher intellectual... emotional IQ.
Right.
My husband's very bright mm-hmm. and smart in books and all that,
and
but not at home.
Doesn't understand his feelings.
And doesn't understand these children. Doesn't understand when little girls are, you know, going through middle school and high school. And imagine what kids are going through now. I can't imagine what yours are going through, because mine yeah. are now 24 and 26. So mine didn't even have an iPhone till probably 9th grade, yeah. 10th grade.
Yeah.
And so they didn't have the Instagram and all this horror.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So I don't know how y'all are dealing with that. But even yeah. mine at the time, everything's just so heightened. And so they're just so freaked out that I feel like I calm down and I don't
right.
let things escalate.
Right.
Now, I think I'm a calming, and I just be like, okay, and let things roll off my back.
Right, right.
And learn how to fight, what battles to fight.
Right, don't take everything they serve up.
That's what
they want.
They're saying.
They just want a reaction.
Yeah.
You can't swat everything.
And their emotions and their hormones are like this.
Right.
All right, so I had a podcast called Sweaty and Pissed, Menopause and More, with my nurse practitioner, who is brilliant, hormone guru. And she said on an episode that middle school and high school girls' hormones are like this, and that it's very similar to a woman going through perimenopause. So if your wife is in her 40s and early 50s, she's going through perimenopause, and then you got a teenage girl, that's why things get so volatile, because everybody's just a wreck.
That's why I'm on the road.
Oh, calm. In a hotel room watching HBO Max, The Winning Time with the Lakers.
And that's probably why they will butt heads, even though they love each other and trying to do it, but they're both, that's not synced up.
Right. And I yeah. bet you that your daughters love her so much more than life.
Right.
But that also gives them the, they feel like, oh, mom's a safe place. I can go nutso on her. She's going to love me no matter what.
Right.
So they would throw all this on me.
Uh-huh.
That's why I said they're sweet to everybody in public. And then they hold it in, and then they come and spew it out onto me.
Right.
But I feel like I diffused things when their daddy would go, you'll never watch television again, and throw, you know, and you're like, that's not realistic, Chuck. Or I'll take your phone, and you'll never have a phone again. I'm like, you can't follow through with that.
Right.
They've exactly. got to have a phone. You'll never drive again. Yeah, they will.
Right.
So he would go from A to D, like, you know, 100%.
Yeah.
And everybody would be crying and squalling and slam the door. And I feel like I diffused. I think
uh-huh.
you just need to let them get through this.
Right.
And let them find your battles to fight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you find somebody smoking dope or dating somebody that ought to be in prison, you know, you need to take care of business.
Right. Time to step in.
It's time to step in. And don't let them do whatever they want to do, because, you know, they're still children and
right.
they need boundaries. I don't understand.
Yeah.
I've never understood parents going, like giving kids alcohol underage, or, you know, like, I want to be the cool people.
No.
So let's provide the, all that. I've never done that. I
yeah.
don't believe in that.
No, they need
own,
a line. They need to know that there's a boundary somewhere, and you have to be the one that sets it.
Yeah, and there's right and wrong.
Yeah, so
and
when they're out with
them.
Their yeah, so when they're out with their friends at a bar far away from you, when they're deciding what to do, there's a little voice in the back of their head that's
yes.
saying, mom would not think this was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the same feeling when you hear an ambulance go by.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And they got that internal thing.
Yeah.
Yes, my darling.
Yeah.
But let me ask you this. Are you going through that horrible ACT prep? Or are they not making little children take those terrible exams to get into college anymore?
Yeah, my one went through it and did all of it. This one doesn't have to do it.
Oh, praise God.
Yeah,
Tom.
It's so good. And she has different ideas of what she wants to do, so it makes sense. And then the pandemic lined up and knocked all those tests out. So she's really kind of in this good place where she would do horrible on those tests. She's not that kind of a kid. She's
yeah.
not like, she's not, you know, some kids can take those things. So I'm really relieved that she doesn't have to go through just being beaten up by those things.
Oh,
you went through it?
Yes,
yeah.
with all three of them. And
yeah.
one, my middle one's a really good test taker.
Right.
My boy and my youngest are not,
mm-hmm.
but made wonderful grades and, you know, and are smart and
yeah.
got ingenuity and all that. But they had to go by what those test scores were.
Tough.
And I'd hire people, and we'd all go through. One of my best friends does that for people. She sits up in her bed and takes ACT test and watches Real Housewives on Bravo. And so she, people hire her, and she's a nut. And I'll say, Emily, do not say cuss words in front of my children. And she, I mean, she just lets them rip. And she likes to get into their personal business and who's dating who. But anyway, she taught my kids, and she said, oh, Lynn, it's like, it's not a scam. But she said, there's ways to take this thing. Like, if right. you're running out of time, just put C. And she taught them all these, you know, street smarts kind of things. But yeah, but they all, you know, had to have it to go into school. And yeah. I'm so thankful that they don't have to have that anymore, because that's stupid.
Yeah.
I don't think you can measure someone's success by a test they took when they were 16, 17.
No.
Well, in a room full of other people that they find attractive. You know, right. there's a lot of things.
Right. There's a lot going on. And also, I think being comedians, I think we look at life in a different way, like what their path is going to be. Because we're friends with so many people that they're all oddballs. Half of them are ADHD. The other half are alcoholics. And they all found their way. They all
yeah.
kind of found, like water, just kind of find a way. And become grown-ups. So it's
yeah.
not like it has to be in this set path.
Yeah, I never thought, oh, you've got to be an accountant. I've got friends
right.
that said, oh, you're going to be an accountant.
Right, exactly.
And these kids are miserable because that's not what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
But I'm a dreamer.
Right.
And I believe in dreaming and doing whatever. I feel like God gives people gifts.
Yeah.
And that's what you need to go with, and
right.
what you enjoy doing. You got one life to live,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And if you
want
to dig ditches, I don't care. I'll help you get a shovel.
Right.
But I believe in being happy and finding joy and doing things
yeah.
you enjoy doing.
Right, exactly.
And, of course, I've had a husband who had health insurance. I say all that. And he, you know, floated me while
yeah.
I discovered, you know, what I could do in my dream.
How was he during... As, like,
always,
was he,
like, whatever you want to do.
Always.
Uh-huh.
Always.
Yeah. And I think you know, he's very quiet. He doesn't like attention brought on him. He's uh-huh. very private. So I think there have been times where he's like, you know, kooky Lynn, I got to deal with all that. But he's always been like, whatever you want to do.
That's great.
And then when this was happening.
Yeah.
I don't think he understood what was happening. And I tried to tell him.
Mm-hmm.
And my baby child had... left a college in Birmingham, Alabama, and decided that she wanted to go to school for makeup for television and film.
Uh-huh.
So we were moving her in Brooklyn, and I had hired these young guys to do my social media. I never put money into my career,
right.
ever. Like, I had two headshots that are, you know,
yeah.
I mean, I look like Flock of Seagulls.
Right.
And if I got any extra money and had gigs, I would buy school uniforms or get the kids haircuts or whatever. That
yeah.
was kind of our deal.
Right.
Is that my husband, that would be our play money.
Uh-huh.
So I never, I was not a good business person, and I never invested back into myself. But
yeah.
I thought I'm either going to quit and go to work at Target, or I'm going to, because I knew Charlie was going to have a baby, and I thought I want to be with that baby, or I'm going to, for 3 to 6 months, I'm just going to put the money into these social media boys, these young kids.
Yeah.
And see if they can help me. And I was moving my baby into her apartment in Brooklyn. And I noticed they put out the video about me talking about taking Chuck to see Def Leppard and Journey and how everybody looked old and had plantar fasciitis in their feet. And that started going viral. And
right.
I said, y'all, I think something's happening. Like, I could physically feel it. And everybody was like, shut up, the Uber's here, and we got to get these suitcases. You know, everybody was fighting and tense, trying
yeah.
to get in through New York, and we didn't know what we were, like a bunch of hillbillies. And so it took him, I think he finally gets it now.
Now?
Like, oh, Lynn's on a tour. She's making some money.
Yeah, there's play money.
People
pretty
like
good.
Her. Yeah,
yeah,
people like her, that kooky thing. It's taken him a while to catch
yeah.
up and all of it.
Yeah,
but
that's
I would,
great, though.
But I was going, Chuck. Like, this is from heaven. Like,
it's
you
happening.
Don't understand.
It's really happening.
And even though I lived in Knoxville, I've always watched people like you. I've always wanted to be a cool kid at the cafeteria table. And to me, that was Comedy Store and Laugh Factory and all that. And in New York at the Comedy Cellar. And all. So I always kept up with what was happening.
Right.
It felt like I had my finger on the pulse.
Uh-huh.
Even though I was a mom in Knoxville, Tennessee, you know, going to Dick's Sporting Goods, buying equipment for this one to play. But I always felt like I had my finger on things.
Yeah.
I don't know what I was about to say. I don't know. But
it's amazing that Chuck was, it's a blessing that he was kind of almost not absent with it, but that it didn't, he wasn't pushing it in either way, telling you to stop or telling you to go harder, just kind of being there. It's a very unique partner to have, because if he could have destroyed it either way,
I know,
or made it more difficult,
or said, you know, maybe you ought to get a real job.
Yeah.
I mean, because in Knoxville we had a comedy club,
right?
We haven't had one in years, but it was Side Splitters.
Uh-huh.
It was also down in Florida, Bobby Jewell. And before that, it was Hef, all those guys from North Carolina. But anyway.
Does he think you're funny?
I don't think he does.
Interesting.
I think I say that.
Uh-huh.
I think there's some things that make him, I'll see his teeth every once in a while. Because he's very stoic and I think he thought that was funny. He doesn't laugh a lot in general. And he's got a good sense of humor.
Yeah.
And he'll come out with a zinger. It's not often. But when he does, the kids and I hold on to it. And go, remember when Dan said, but he's a Monty Python kind of guy. And I'm a Saturday Night Live, Will Ferrell kind of person.
Yeah.
So our sense of humors are different.
Right.
But he knows that people must love me. But I don't let him come to shows very rarely.
Really?
Because I feel that.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you what it is. I think I let him come to some in the early, and he's very detailed.
Uh-huh.
and type A. And so I would be spinning a yarn and talking and doing, and he would say, it was not a Tuesday, it was a Wednesday. And it was at 4. It wasn't at 3. And I'm like, shut up. You're ruining my yard.
It doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything.
It's a horrible detail.
So I was very sensitive about it. And it's just better. I'm like, here, sell some t-shirts.
Yeah.
But he very rarely goes with me. I just did the Win in Las Vegas.
Wow.
Oh.
That's where I'm going on Friday.
I wish I could go with you.
Oh, it's the best, isn't
it? Oh, my
it?
Gosh. So wonderful.
It's so nice.
And he loves to gamble. He likes to play a little blackjack. So he's still got a big job and he's got a lot on him.
Right.
But if there's somewhere fun that I know he can play golf or do something. So he came to the Win with me. And
right.
They put you in that suite.
Yeah.
And you're out there looking at all that. And
it's so nice.
He filmed it and said, if you're worried about your mom, don't be. She's fine. But I normally don't get to stay in stuff like that.
You know, it's so funny that when you look down at everyone at the pool, when you hear that beat, like you're on the 30th floor or something, and you can literally hear the music's too loud for me inside the thing. I can't even imagine. And you look down, and it's just like bacteria. It's just people are bacteria filling.
They're doing Lord knows what, you know,
all jammed into a pool.
Little women with pot-belly stomachs doing God knows what. You know, my baby played travel volleyball all over the United States. My girls did. You're talking about a scam.
Any sport.
Travel sports.
Terrible.
Terrible. If anybody out here needs to make a living, get some socks from Nike or something. Set them up in a convention center where people are playing sports. And they'll buy them and you'll make $1 million. But we were out going and doing, and she was in the Nationals. We went in Reno, Nevada.
Okay.
Now think about who would have a child's anything in Reno, Nevada. And we stayed in a hotel that gambling and people were like at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, like all the kids had goggles on and were swimming. And then at 3 o'clock, this music started pumping.
Oh, God.
And they took this big thing out, and all these women were, you know, twerking. And my kids, you know, were trying to swim and a cigarette butt and go. And then somebody was making out in the jacuzzi, and my baby is the one that would stare at all that. Yeah. Loved, wanted to see middle-aged women drunk, making out with somebody. Like, she was like, is that slot machines I'm here? I mean, she loved all that. Yeah. My middle child would have been like, Mommy, I'm scared. Yeah. The baby was like, oh my gosh, let me watch them make out. You know, she was 12.
It was my future.
But yeah, that was pretty nifty getting to go to the Wynn.
Yeah,
and
so
and that gave
nice.
Me some kind of street cred. I tell you what's given me street cred is I did an arena with Nate Bargatze.
Right.
And then, and everybody was like, what? You're doing something with Nate. And I've known Nate for years and he's darling.
Yeah.
And then when I said, I'm going to Las Vegas, they were like, where? And I go, the Wynn. They're like, what? Because years ago, I was on a tour with, I mean, like 20 years ago, with the Southern Fried Chicks. And we were kind of the, we thought we were the answer to the female version of Blue Collar.
Yeah.
And our little man, that little crusty man that booked us, was one of those old school, didn't take no for an answer, and put us in every nook and cranny in North America. Is all this to it? And and just worked all night and did. And I think people go, yeah, we'll take him just so he'd hang up. And he put us somewhere off the strip in Las Vegas, and I can't remember what it's called, but I remember it had a daycare, and I remember that it was rough. And I thought, woo, I'm in Vegas, but it's very different than now being at the Wynn.
Yeah, I've done those too. You're kind of like off the beaten path. Yeah, and it's like where all the locals like to go gamble because the odds are good in the middle of the afternoon. Yeah, and you're like, I'm in Vegas, kind of.
Well, and he put us in Laughlin before we got there. Oh, you ever been to Laughlin?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
This is like penny slots.
Laughlin was, that was rough. I think that is the roughest.
That's rough.
I did a club there with, do you remember John Joseph? Do you know John Joseph?
No, I don't.
He was a good comedian. He's still banging around. Great act, great guy. And he and I were opening, we were the opening weekend in Laughlin at like the Hilton of their new showroom thing. And it was so, it was 200 degrees. You couldn't go outside. You literally could not go outside. And then the people that were there, just people that make bad decisions in life. Like, why are you coming to this place? And it was so, the shows were, we did like a weekend of shows. They were so bad after the first night that the next night I brought a yo-yo up on stage with me. And after a couple jokes, just nothing. No, they didn't even know where they were. I just like, you know what? I'm not going to put myself through this, so I'm going to do something that you will understand. And I just started playing yo-yo to get through the set.
Oh,
and
my Lord.
I just did 10 minutes of yo-yo and then said goodnight.
Did they like it?
I have no idea. They were half dead. They
half
were on
dead.
oxygen and carts and...
That's exactly who was there with mine. And we walked in, and Brenda, who Etta May, I don't know if you've ever heard of Etta May.
Yeah.
She was in our trio. She plays a character like Larry the Cable Guy. And she said, is this just a series? She said, is this an amputee convention? And it was people that had lost limbs, and it was a lot of oxygen and wheelchairs, and they rolled a woman up to the front of the stage, and I opened. I was the first one.
Yeah.
And she had on a Lisa t-shirt from Bart Simpson, Lisa Simpson t-shirt, and she was humped over and sound asleep the whole time. And I remember being
asleep
and thinking, I'm gonna quit. This is my last gig. I'm okay. I can go to work at Target. And there was a TV in the green room, and Carrie Underwood was up against Bo, whatever that little thing's name was, in American Idol.
Uh-huh.
And that's how long ago it was. And I remember they kept me from losing it. I just watched American Idol while the other two went out on stage. And a little old man came up to us. We used to sell CDs. And he came up to the table and said, you two are great. Her not so much. Talking about me. And I thought, well, don't worry about it, mister, because I'm not coming back and I'm not doing it. And I remember the next week was going to be Thunder from Down Under. And it was that.
Oh, yeah.
It was that Australian bunch that take their clothes off. And I just thought, my life is over.
Yeah, what am I doing?
What am I doing?
Those places really make you question every decision you made in your life. Like, if this is it, then I'm not, this isn't going to work.
I know.
But that is why Laughlin is pretty close to visiting hell. You're supposed to see that.
Yeah.
You're supposed to see that and understand that there are traps that you can fall into, and you could end up doing a bunch of those around the country if you make the wrong decisions.
I know. And most casinos, do you find, are darling. And
great.
They treat you like Elvis.
It feels like show business.
Uh-huh.
That backstage at the Wynn, oh, I just like sitting on the couch. I don't even have to do the show. Just let me sit here and feel like this is what show business is supposed to be.
There's, I know,
fruit and crudité and you just, oh, it's a dream.
And somebody escorts you down. They've got a guac in their pocket, you know.
Yeah, taking you through the kitchen.
Yeah. Have you ever done Tulsa River Spirit in Tulsa,
no.
Oklahoma? You've got to. And the sheriff that used to be the sheriff in that town,
yeah,
now has a farm. And does this on the side. And he carries, he's got a walkie-talkie, and he carries a gun. And he walked me, don't not leave your room, and walked me down. And little Karen Mills was opening for me. And we've been traveling together since 2004. And we were going, what the heck? And they walked us through these, you know, like Jim Gaffigan's on the wall, Earth, yeah, Wind and Fire, Fleetwood Mac. You're like, what in the world?
It's the best.
And he goes, just let me know if your family wants to come by here, and if you got a couple of nights, you need somewhere to stay in between places. Sammy Hagar hangs out at the pool all the time. And I'm like, what?
It's the best.
And Chris Rock was coming, Gabriel Iglesias.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my Lord,
yeah,
I should be mopping. Y'all should let me vacuum.
Yeah.
What am I doing here?
But that's the funniest thing. They don't even have to be that nice to you. Like, they just have to be kind of respectful because you have been abused so long in show business, doing all of these gigs that aren't even gigs, that you're just, there's no food and there's no money and there's no hotel, and you've just been abused
for so long.
There's
a dirty Band-Aid in the back of the green room. And
and then someone's like, welcome. And you're like, oh.
Did you feel that? Because that, I'm glad you said that.
We all have,
right? I
almost
feel guilty now.
Yeah.
Like at the Wynn, I felt like I need to dust or
right.
There's something. I don't even know. You know, when I went up to the desk,
yeah,
I don't know if I'm supposed to be here.
I know. I do this thing, and it's purely PTSD from all of those. And just being respectful because you know how hard everyone else is working around you. Whoever is the housekeeper in whatever hotel I'm in, I picture them walking in and like, what angel was in here? Because I clean everything. All the towels are in a pile. All the garbage has been thrown out. Because I feel like I'm not doing anything better than what you're doing. We're all just dealing with a Wednesday. We're all dealing with a day.
Right.
And if I can make your day a little bit easier, that's great. And hopefully it'll come back when I get to go to the next spot. But yeah, I am.
I can tell you've got a sweet spirit, and
guilt-ridden spirit.
But you're right,
right?
And I feel all the time like, what in the world?
Yeah.
Am I doing here? And thank goodness, I mean, somebody wants to listen to me babble on.
Yeah.
I'm so thankful.
So thankful.
But I also feel kind of like an imposter, and that I should be cleaning. Or, I mean, that I should be doing. When I go out and these audiences are so wonderful.
Yeah.
And I think I should vacuum out their car. Like, I should go home with them.
Right.
I could make them a meal. I feel that way.
Yeah.
And I'm just so thankful to
be. No, it's the best.
And then I've had other people's, that like my concert promoters, and they're like, oh, we've had comedians that go, this should have happened to me a long time ago, and, you know, F y'all for not getting to making it happen.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what?
Right.
And I've done this 22 years, but it has been up and down, and there's times I could not get arrested.
Right.
And then there were other times where it would be like, you got a Hollywood deal, and, you know, and I was naive and thought, oh, I really am going to be on TV.
Right. This will be easy.
Yeah. And it never worked out, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's the great thing about this now is that you don't need that, really. And you have all these fans now and millions of people watching you and showing up at the shows without doing a TV show. That's new and great. We're pretty blessed that we have that timing now. that you just kind of do it on your own.
I know.
Right?
Because, you know, everybody says to me, who's watching network television? Mm-hmm. You know, growing up, that's what my idea of success was, yeah. was to have my own sitcom, because I loved Roseanne and Ray, yeah. Romano and Bill Cosby and all those shows, you know, and that's what
way.
I thought that was what I wanted.
Yeah.
And now I think I don't have the strength to do that. They say it's like 14 hours a day. I'd have to get IVs.
And stop touring. And stop,
yeah.
No, I know.
Even though touring, and it is wonderful, but it's hard. I think at my age, like, you know, I still fly everywhere, and I don't know, someday I may have to get a bus.
Right.
So that I can sleep in the night, you
know?
I'm on a cruise ship.
I just don't want to do the driving in between the gigs. Like I love going everywhere. And then sometimes you're like, hey, there's a gig in Red Wing, Minnesota, and it's sold out, and they're very happy you're coming. And you're like, yeah, but I got to drive 2 hours through the woods from the airport to get there. I don't know if I want to do that anymore.
I bet you've done everything, haven't you? You've been everywhere and done everything.
Yeah, a lot. I was calling, before the pandemic, I was calling it the What Are You Doing Here tour. Because every time I'd get off stage at some performing arts center, they'd be like, what are you doing here? I'm like, well, you're here. I should have been asking you that question.
Okay, so Tom, you started doing this. How old were you when you started this?
I was in my late 20s, like mid-20s.
Did you go to New York from New Jersey to do
it? Yeah, I started in New York, was my first place. Yeah, because I went to school in New Jersey, grew up in New Jersey, went to school in New Jersey, and then came up and lived right outside of New York. And June 12th, 1993 was my first spot at the New York Comedy Club.
I've been to the New York Comedy Club.
Yeah, this was the old one where this was, the original one was on top of a country western bar. And it was, and I got I called the Village Voice, I called the number and went and did my first open mic at like, it was still light out. It was probably 6 p.m. And went upstairs from the country western bar, and there was the little club, and I went in there and did it, and it was me and Greg Giraldo were the only two comedians on the bill.
Oh my gosh,
yeah.
I loved him.
Oh, he was.
So I must have gone to the newer one that was a brick.
Yeah.
That was I think.
Yeah, I think that was the second location.
But see, I've never gotten to do a lot of that stuff. I've done some of it, but I haven't done a lot of it.
Yeah.
And I've always wanted to. And see, I always think, oh, Jim Gaffigan and
New York, doing all that. That was the biggest advantage, where there were all these clubs, and you could just be around great people. So you got an idea of where you stacked up and what to do and what not to do and what made people really good. And that New York was great for that, for sure. But, you know, people like yourself that didn't come from that, you're just so you, because it was just you, right? It's your own path.
Yeah. And I do think, I've got a lot of friends that were in L.A. during that whole, after Blue Collar blew up, that are from the South. And I think when you live in Los Angeles, maybe, or in New York, you almost become a character of yourself.
Right.
You know, and before you know it, you're saying things like, jack my hair to Jesus. And you're like, what does that mean? We don't say that. So I think it kept me real.
Right.
Being in Tennessee and Texas and with a bunch of little kids, you know? I think it kept me, because if I'd have been younger, I would have been worried about my thighs, and I would have been in L.A. trying to be pretty, and it would have gotten in my head, and I would have been like, what do they want me to be?
That's not who
I am.
That's the biggest curse. Whenever you have those moments of, what do they want me to be? Yeah, that's the kiss of death. So now that you've gone on this journey now, because you are right ahead of me, what's on your mind that you like to talk about on stage now that everybody's kind of out of the house?
I talk about that grandbaby a lot, and I talk about the relationship with their daddy, now that it's just us, because, you know, there's a lot of, it's hard.
Yeah.
When you, are empty nesters, and it's like, who are you, and what do you want from me? I mean, you know, he's always building a career, and he's very, you know, overachiever, and and wants everything to be perfect. And then I was trying to do comedy, and then, and that, but we, the kids were playing sports or whatever they were doing, and we were so into everything that that I tell young people now, nurture that relationship with your husband and have a date night every week, because these kids are going to be gone. And I, and people would tell me that, and I'd be like, and now it's just me and him, and it, you know, you got to have things to talk about and all that. So I talk about building intimacy with their daddy again, and how his idea of intimacy is so different from mine. You know, men are different. God made y'all different. And there's nothing wrong with that. I celebrate that. Love men. I've always loved men. In this age where everybody's pissed at all the time at men, I love men. I've loved men since I was in kindergarten. And I love the way God made y'all. Yeah. And y'all are supposed to be the hunter and the gatherer. And you're supposed to, you know, see your wife in a gown and, you know, go nuts. I mean, that's just, you know.
It's just hardwired.
That's hardwired. Yeah. And I dig that.
Right. I have a friend who... they became empty nesters, and he was so nervous going on date night with his wife that he wrote down talking points of things that could get them through the dinner.
Well, that's a good idea.
He was so scared of, like, what are we going to talk about?
I know. Because you're not talking about, well, she's got a volleyball tournament in Colorado, so you be in Indianapolis while I got, you know.
Yeah, it's that business is now dissolved.
Yeah,
it was the two of you running this corporation and trying to figure, and so it's all logistics. It was all just like, okay, and what about her, and is she getting in the SATs and this and that, and who's got to pick up who, and then it's that company's gone.
It is. So we talk about, we sit and look at pictures of this baby, and say, look at his calves, look at his mouth, look at his teeth. We all kiss him in the teeth, and then we all catch every bug that comes around because he's in daycare. And so we don't care. We love him. We take that bullet because we love him. But we talk about the baby a lot. And now, I mean, Chuck will just go, where are you this week? And half the time, he doesn't know where I am.
Right.
And he's like, he didn't even ask you more. How'd it go?
Right.
Every once in a while, he does. Yeah. But I talk about, you
know, how was Boise? It was Phoenix. Okay.
And people say, oh, is your husband going to go with you? And I'm like, no, I cannot take him. You know, God love him, but he would be expecting to do nasty things with me. Like at the Wynn, I was like, Chuck, this is a big deal. And I was trying to put on makeup, and I had one of their robes. I love it when there's a robe in the room. And that's very rare for me. But
it's true.
So I had it down, and I still have these breast implants, and he loves them. And I was playing a little... Michael Jackson, some old school, getting hyped up. I was, you know, because I was nervous and torn up over it. And he had been drinking and playing blackjack, and he comes in and starts doing that. I'm like, oh no, I know what that look is, because he's not a dancer and very introverted. So I know when he's, you know, I'm thinking, oh no, and I'm like, don't touch me, Chuck. I'm gonna sweat over my lamp. I've got to get these. I've got glue on my eyelashes. Don't. So if I was on the road with him, I would have to do horrible things and be funny. And he would go, what is there to eat? I'd be on a bus cooking something. I don't have time for that. You know, my girls every once in a while will travel with me, and they're, you know, 26 and 24, and they're, you know, they've got new spray tan and highlights, and because we are from the South, and they'll be like, how do I look? And I mean, they're about to introduce me. And I'm like, you look great. And then, and it's not about, it's, I'm practically, you know, in a gown, because they stole my dress. So I just do whatever. I mean, they want they really don't want attention, but they're like, how do I look? And so I don't take the family a lot.
Yeah, that's smart.
And I've worked with people before that have hired kids on the road and stuff, and I just don't think it's good.
I see Jim on the road, and he's got all of his 12 children with him, and he's kayaking, and it's like, and they're all getting in the bus, and they're all coming on stage and introducing him. And I'm like, Jim, how do you do it? But it's, he operates in a different.
He's bound to, because I've never seen anybody churn out.
Yeah.
Material.
I know.
You think, what tour is this?
Yeah.
You know, all new material. I see him post of, and I'm like, good Lord, I must be the biggest loser.
I
met him one time and at a after CMA's after party, and I didn't get invited to the CMA's. Somebody just said, Lynn, come along, and I snuck in. And he had been a presenter, and I've always been a big fan of his.
Yeah.
And I got to meet him, and he said, you did the Dry Bar comedy special, didn't you? I went, yeah. And he said, I know who you are. And I remember thinking, what? Because, you know, I did this Dry Bar thing.
Yeah, that was it, right? That was the one that really popped.
Well, that helped, but that didn't pop. That didn't make me pop.
Okay.
It was when I really couldn't sell tickets. It wasn't it didn't translate into ticket sales.
Okay.
I think it got me a lot of fans, but I don't think they were people that went anywhere.
Right.
And I remember, you know, I really and truly did that special thinking nobody's ever going to see it. My manager said to me, there's this thing out of Salt Lake City. The Mormons are doing it. Nobody will ever see it. And I was like, okay. And he said, you've got a luncheon in Dubuque that week. That's how good my career was going, Tom.
Yeah.
That I was doing a luncheon in Dubuque, which nothing wrong with them. They're fun.
Yeah.
I mean, they do is drink. I mean, everybody's drunker than Cooter Brown at 11 o'clock and I had a mimosa and then had to go sit on a toilet in a convention center because the room started spinning. But anyway, then I flew down there and did that Dry Bar and thinking that nobody would ever see it.
Right.
And, I did a bunch of old material that I didn't have anywhere.
Right.
And I could barely remember.
Smart. Yeah.
And I look at it and I cringe. I think it was horrible.
No.
Oh, you angel. But I did that about Maggie being mean at 14, 15, and that went viral.
Yeah.
But it didn't, I couldn't sell tickets. Like I was at Orlando, Tampa.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Orlando and Tampa Improv, and they were like, we love her. She can't sell tickets, won't have her back. She didn't get drunk and fight in the parking lot, but we're not having her back.
Right.
And I just thought, I really thought I'm going to just
So it was
quit.
Facebook?
It was, I hired those young guys. And they
all those clips.
They got that stuff, and you couldn't use Dry Bar. They own it.
Oh.
So I couldn't use that.
Oh.
So they gathered up all the stuff I had over the years, over 20-something years, and started putting stuff out. And I think the second video was the Def Leppard and Journey, and something about, you know, everybody's gone to concerts and thinks, oh my Lord, everybody looks 100, and, you know, Foghat is on their last leg, and that resonated with people.
We're not
and
cool
then I think,
anymore.
Yeah, and I think people saw that,
and
then goes, what else has she done? We don't know her.
Right.
So then, because, you know, most of my career, I've done like the same five clubs every year that would have me.
Yeah.
But they were good clubs, like Stardome, Zanies in Nashville, and Austin Cap City Comedy Club, which is one of the best in the nation. And so I had those, but I mainly, to be able to stay home with three babies, I did corporate, private, any fundraisers, anything I could.
Yeah.
To try to stay in it.
Yeah.
And but it, you know, it wasn't glamorous.
You're right.
But people didn't know who I was.
Yeah.
And I think now people go, oh, she must be one of those YouTubers. She's just started doing comedy out of the back of her van. And I go, no, I've been doing it 22 years.
Right. Exactly.
And I do kind of have a chip on my shoulder. I don't want people to think that. I've done this a long time.
Yeah. Oh, who cares? As long as they know. I mean, because
that's what Greg Warren said. He goes, Lynn, who cares?
Yeah, who cares that they know that? I mean, it's nice. I mean, the story's great, and it's nice to hear it and stuff. But for people just to, they don't realize, like, this is kind of how out of touch and they shouldn't be. They don't know how it works. You're so good and smooth and professional. Of course there's 20 years behind it. Of course. And there's all of this material. It's like, you know, for them to think that you just showed up, that's just them. They'll figure it out.
Oh, Tom, thank you
or
for
not,
saying
and
that.
Who cares, right? Because they're showing up and having a great time. They don't need to know what this is.
I know, and I need to focus on that part.
Yeah.
You know, but I can't, in my head, I want to be one of the cool kids at the Comedy Store.
Oh, we're
the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
I do. I've always loved comedy.
Yeah.
And I've watched all of y'all for years.
Yeah.
And I say all of y'all. Jim Gaffigan and Lori Kilmartin.
Yeah.
Came up, or went to San Antonio, and I opened for her.
Uh-huh.
And we sat in the back, and I remember her saying, you've gotten to have three babies, and you, of course, she was, you know, headlining and huge, yeah. and writing for Conan or whoever, and yeah. and she goes, I want a baby, and this was before she had that little baby,
yeah,
and I thought, you know, for women, it is so hard in this business, and I am lucky that I got yeah. to have my family,
yeah,
and then now they don't need me, and I can be gone, and
yeah,
you know,
it's perfect.
Even
it's
though I love really... to go home and get a big Costco run in,
yeah,
and I like to take it to their all their refrigerators and to make sure everybody's got stuff. That is my if what's I take the, my money, that's what I want to do.
What's on that list? What do they get?
I love for everybody to have salad mixes for the week, and I like to get everybody their meat for the week, their chicken breasts. I like them to have organic. I don't want this grandbaby to eat chemicals.
Right.
I fed mine chemicals. Oh, we didn't yeah. know any better.
Tons of it.
Tons of chemicals.
Process
so,
everything.
Oh, horrible. So I made sure that they have, they're stocked with, you know, yeah. good antioxidant berries. I get all those kind of things. And nice. I do, there are some brands now that
yeah.
that have like grass-fed beef in it, but it's something you can fix.
Yeah.
You know, because they're all working and, you know,
yeah.
out of their minds. And so I try to have stuff like that, but also cook when I go home. And
I was
they all come
say,
to my house.
And they do. That's mm-hmm. good. If yeah. it's just Chuck and you, do you cook?
Not much.
Yeah. You need more people.
I need more people.
Yeah.
We're bad about opening a salad mix, you know, yeah. and putting a protein with it or whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm used to cooking, you know, yeah. several vegetables, a bread.
Yeah.
Like growing up, if we didn't have a cornbread or a biscuit, or a French loaf,
yeah.
something. It didn't feel right.
It doesn't
to me.
Feel right, exactly.
And then I would go to a Weight Watchers meeting, and they would go, "You got to get that out of your head. Like you don't have to have that." And but that's what
no,
we did
no,
all my
it's
life.
It's so worth it. I cook on. I'll come home, take that 6 a.m. flight on Sunday back after getting into the hotel at midnight, and people think like, "What are you insane?" But I love landing. Saying hi to the family, going to the store, getting all the food, and who's coming over? Who are we adding? Who are we adding to? Because it's the numbers are dwindling, right? So now it's like sometimes just the two of us, and it's like, who else is coming? Well, we have a nephew that's here, and we have a niece that's coming by, and cooking for them for the rest of that Sunday, that is
that's your
the best.
Thing.
Oh,
that
yeah.
is my thing too.
Yeah, it's the best.
All right, where's the 20-year-old?
20-year-old is in school back east.
Where?
Is yeah. she, well, I don't say publicly.
Okay.
But I'll tell you off air.
Okay.
But she's, yeah, she's back. She's near family back there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if she's near me, you know I'll fry her a chicken and she can sleep in a bed.
Yeah, she's not that close.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, oh, but how
but
wonderful.
But I'll take you up on that.
Okay.
When I'm rolling through town.
Okay. Where do you go? Zany's?
I was just at the City Winery in Nashville.
Oh,
I like
yeah.
that place.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Louis Anderson used to come there. I was a big fan of Louis.
Oh, yeah.
I got to work with him one time.
Oh, he's the best.
Loved him.
He was so great.
Oh.
Louis Anderson, I had him on my radio show, and he, I've just been a fan of his forever, and he was so sweet and so nice. We had met before, but he came after some time. We hadn't seen each other, and he came on the radio show. He's like, I've been watching you, Tom. We do similar talking about your family, and I know what you're doing. We're different enough where we could be friends, but we're very similar talking about the same things. It was such a compliment that he was even knew what I was up to.
Oh,
oh, he's so great.
So sweet.
So sweet.
I met him after Baskets had come out, and I was
oh,
a huge
yeah.
Baskets fan.
Yeah.
And I loved him. And Martha,
yeah.
that played Martha, she and I came up together in Cap City in Austin, and she was hilarious.
So funny. So
dry. Funny. Oh.
So funny. So Nashville is the time. What's the gig that I can possibly meet Chuck?
You need to come to the Bijou or the Tennessee Theater
okay.
in Knoxville and work those
okay.
beautiful theaters. Tennessee Theater is probably about 1,500 seats.
Okay.
Bijou's about 700.
Okay.
And then we also have the Knoxville Civic Auditorium, too, if
okay.
you needed, like, big time.
Right.
I think that's where Jim comes and Nate Bargatze
have
been coming. But Theo just did Taylor Tennessee Theater. Taylor Tomlinson's doing it.
Right.
We get a lot of comedy come through there.
All right, good.
Dennis Miller shot a special at the Bijou right. one time.
Well, I will only accept the gig if I can clear it with you first that you will be
there. I've got to be there, Tom. And you can stay with me. I know people say that to you all the time. You don't have to if you like your hotel room and like to clean it. But we can cook and do.
I honestly, I say no to everybody, but I would say yes to that invite for sure. I don't know what it is. I have the same thing that you have where I feel like we have been friends much, much longer than we have.
Oh, my darling.
Yeah.
Doll.
Yeah.
Thank you, honey.
Enjoy the bread in your hotel room.
Thank you. I will.
Yeah. And give me a report. I want to know because okay. you know these things.
Okay.
I want to review.
I will. And thank you for letting me be part of the cool kids. I mean,
you are
I feel
cool
that
kid.
Way. I
you
feel
are
that
a
way.
Cool kid.
You, Angel, when you asked me this, I thought, oh my God. I tell my kid, they go, what are you doing out here? And I go, I'm going to get to be with Tom Papa.
Yeah.
You are my favorite. Thank you, my angel.
You're the best. We've got it, Aaron. All right, everybody, that is it. That was the big conversation with Leanne. I told you you would love her. You would love her. And I have to say, I genuinely want to visit her at her home. I want to meet her family. Don't you want to meet her family? I just know that a cooked meal with Leanne is just one of those stops on the road I will make happen during my tour at some point. She's so funny. Check her out everywhere. YouTube, Facebook. She's got specials. Go to leannemorgan.com and that'll bring you to everything that she does. Thank you, Leanne, for being on the show. Thank you to Trade Coffee and Policy Genius. And thank all of you for listening once again. I hope you enjoyed this one. And keep spreading the word. Keep liking and subscribing, as the kids say. And we want more people to come to the table every week. You guys are the best. Until next time, enjoy your day.